This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Tech and show number 145, recorded on November 21st, 2013. Here at Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska, and freshly back from the MVP Summit in Seattle. And of course, we host the show with world-class show notes each week out at theAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions, you can always contact the show and just send me an email, jim at theAverageGuy.tv. You can find me on Twitter, just at Jay Collison, or follow the show schedule on Twitter at theAverageGuy.tv. If you're watching us on Google Plus or on YouTube, you can also join us for a live chat during the show right next to the video window. You can, and we'd love to have you join us via your tablet or mobile device as well. And we now have enabled low bandwidth streaming out at the live page. We also have a new YouTube high bandwidth page as well. It's all out at theAverageGuy.tv. Click on the big live button if you'd like, or up in the upper right hand corner. So YouTube high bandwidth. And we will get you there. All right, freshly back from the MVP Summit, and I got a couple guys I've locked in for the podcast. I'm pretty excited about talking about some of these things with them and in the middle of the afternoon, and actually taking a message from his nanny right now is Andrew Morris. Andrew, welcome to the show. I'll just say, it's good to be here. All right, so that's Andrew, and then over
Hey, young.
That's a good one. Just in case his audio cuts out.
Yeah. How are you, Andrew?
I'm good. I'm back.
You are back. We were talking early in the show, and we thought maybe it's been 100 since you've been on, and now we're at 140.
Yeah, I think it's been like a 7 or 8 month hiatus, I think.
You've had some children. You've gotten a car wreck. You've been busy at work.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff's happened.
Yeah. So, well, welcome back. Good to have you. Sitting next to him and in another country other than the United States, our friend John Zadler. John, how are you?
Hello, gentlemen. Doing good. Blew up my computer just about an hour ago while the power supply went on me, so been scrounging to see how fast I can install Google Hangouts.
Man, it's a good thing you're good at that, John. It's a good thing you're good at getting that stuff done. It always seems like you have freshly minted a PC right before the show starts. You always handle it real well. John, we back from the MVP conference. Dave and I headed out there, Seattle, Washington. It was this last week, November 17th through the 21st, 2013, if you're listening to this on a time-shifted mode. And we had a good conference. We missed you, John. We were saying we got to figure out a way to get John Zadler to hang out.
Yeah, I felt bad when I saw your picture of you and Dave and Chris Lux.
Yeah, we got together with Lux.
Cool.
It was good. We got some dinner in a fish place on the Sound, and the sun was going down. It was really cool. It was good to see Chris again, and we had had three of the four back of the Home Server Show guys, and I got a lot of questions this week on Home Server. You look at the badge and your discipline, your area of expertise is there, and like this is the universal response. Ooh, sorry. Like, what's your expertise? Windows Home Server? Oh, sorry. Sorry. So, we spent the week kind of lobbying for a new MVP role there at Microsoft, and we'll see what happens. I won't jinx it quite yet, but we'll see what happens. It's a good conference. It's always good to go. I hadn't been on the campus at Microsoft. I hadn't been there before, and we'd been to Seattle, but I had not made it over to the conference ground or to the campus before. And beautiful campus. It's Microsoft is an amazing place. They have a shuttle system of about 100 shuttles that just go around campus all day, just driving people from one building to the next. And I think that's well documented. But that was kind of fun, and they did a nice job. They took care of us. A great summit and a great opportunity to spend some time hearing about some of the new stuff. It always cracks me up because we're MVPs and we're supposed to be in under NDA. But they'll never tell us any future stuff. They're like, oh, no, I can't tell you that. I'm like, well, what can you tell me then if you can't tell me that stuff? They tell us these secrets about what, things in the past. And they're like, oh, don't tell anybody. I'm like, well, everybody knows that already.
It's already happened, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes I think this NDA stuff is a rouge. I don't know, but it's good to hang out with them. We got access to some product engineers, and they did bring some of their senior staff in. We got a chance to talk with some of them. and I got an opportunity to hang out. And, you know, we talked about the guys from Outlook.com came in, the guys from SkyDrive came in. I got a bunch of free SkyDrive. We'll talk about that here in a second. One of the things they did allow us MVPs to do is buy the Surface 2s at a severely discounted price. And so I now have, I'll hold this up here. So let's get the thing turned on.
Who doesn't love a new toy?
Yeah, well, it's got my login screen there, but I do have got the new Surface 2 up and rolling. You know, I've liked it a lot. I forced myself into it all week. I thought, okay, if this is what I'm going to have, then I'm going to see if I can make this. You know, they don't call it RT anymore, but everyone's been bitching about RT, and I was like, I'm going to see if I can actually make this work over the week. And so I didn't carry anything else with me. I just carried that. And I over the course of sessions, you know how you're doing other things while you're supposed to be listening, right? So some of those sessions were a little beyond me, a little over my head or whatever. They weren't particularly exciting. So I forced my way in. A couple things I couldn't, you know, you can't get access to, things like LiveWriter, right? Windows LiveWriter doesn't work in RT. There's not an RT version for it. I don't really want to use Word for updating my blog. Dave likes to go directly to WordPress for that, and I don't. So if I'm going to do that, I'm going to have to access it through a remote desktop connection. I'll just come back home and open up LiveWriter on a remote desktop tech connection to get it done. So that's one way of getting around it until they figure out something else. Maybe they'll come up with a Metro app for it or something like that. But pretty much everything else that I needed to do, you know, I found out for work, it comes with Outlook, right? The full version of Outlook. So you get Word, Outlook, Excel, and what's the other one? I should know that, but I don't.
OneNote?
Doesn't matter. OneNote, yes, there you go. OneNote, thanks.
Yeah, I think that was the version, when you talk about the Outlook there, that's the Outlook RT, right?
Which it is Outlook RT,
I remember the story was, they were, like, they didn't release it the first year. I think they said it was too much of a power hog, or it was maybe a little buggy, and then, you know, and only a select few people had it. So now I guess it's all cleaned up and running. So it runs, is very smooth on the screen and all?
You know, I didn't use it, John. I started setting it up, and I thought, wait a minute. I've got it. I can access my email in Outlook through Enfuse, which is a Citrix client that we use to remote in. And so there is a Citrix receiver Metro app that you can download. It's free and install. And when you go to our website, our Enfuse website, it automatically opens that receiver, and it's a remote client for Outlook on the RT. And it actually works a ton better to do it off the server than to be running Outlook locally, especially on a device like this. So I didn't run it, even though I thought I was going to. I thought, let me try this. You know, let me try running Outlook from work. And I think it's a little bit better of a solution. So for some of those things that I need, I'm just going to remote in. When I can remote access to something, I'm going to.
You're making me think of a subject I've been with this remote app stuff. Do you recall Microsoft released recently their app there? I don't know if you can see this here. I mean, it's charging, but can you see this tablet? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, there's the orange icon there. That's Microsoft's remote.
Remote desktop. What do you
call it? Remote desktop. Yeah, because remember, like all the other guys. I mean, there's a bunch of the remote apps out there, but this is the one that Microsoft. You know, it's their version of the software. So I guess it should be compatible with a lot of different things. So you know, there's one for the Mac and then the Android and I think Windows 8. There's the Windows 8, the Metro screen and stuff. So I got some news around that, too. We'll get to that later.
Okay, yeah. Well, so I ended up remoting into a lot of stuff while I was, you know, I was trying to set up the Surface 2. And by the, I don't know, 3 days, by Wednesday, there goes the Surface right there. Somebody just sent me a note. I didn't turn it down. By the end of the week, it's pretty productive. I'm actually going to take it to work tomorrow and see how much work I can get done. They did give us the first-gen keyboards, which are kind of, you know, the touch covers. Oh, there it goes. Somebody's tweeting me.
Yeah, that's the ones that aren't backlit, right? And there's less points, whatever they call them, touch points?
Yeah. Yeah, there's less. Yeah. Yeah, there are less touch points. Okay, let's see. I'm getting some.
But besides that's a great keyboard.
No, I think we knew going in it wouldn't be a very good keyboard. And, you know, I think everybody knows that was not, you know, that was not their best attempt. And I think while they were trying, I think they learned some things. They learned some things about it, and they've improved it on version 2, and it's just got tons more sensors, and it's backlit. And so it's it is hold on a sec here. And so what I, my plan is on this V1, you know, they just gave these to us when we got there because they probably have a crap load of them because nobody bought them once they found out how bad they were. I'm going to use it till it wears out, and then I'll be looking for either that. I'll be looking for a V2 type, I think, or maybe a V2 Touch. I might do that first. And then they do have a type that's coming out that's got an extra battery pack in it. But one of the things folks I know have said about, you know, the battery life on that, in the RT that I had, I literally ran all day. I started at 9. I'd have the screen on through all these sessions doing stuff, looking at what they were doing, you know. We had an Xbox 360 or an Xbox One presentation, and so I was looking at all the new Xbox services that are coming out and such. And I would get all day. By 5 o'clock, I would be at 20%. And so, you know, I was getting 8 hours easy on the RT using it. I mean, connecting to services, surfing the web, messing around with it. It was something I could use all day without having to charge it, so it worked out real well. And so from a battery life perspective, it's done real well. And it's zippy, and it's fast, and it, I don't know, I like it. I held it. You know, we went out to the store. Dave and I, we tweeted this too. We went out to the store, and we held the Lumia 2520s, you know, the new RT from Nokia. I don't like it. It doesn't feel, this feels nice in your hand. You know, this, when I'm holding this, it feels sturdy and rugged and it's light. And I read a Kindle book on the way home on it tonight. It worked great on the flight, you know. Just, it was nice in portrait mode, you know, like this. It was really handy to read on. The screen was the right brightness and the Kindle book displayed correctly. And, because I was contemplating purchasing, you know, a Kindle recently because I'm not reading enough books. So, it worked out really well. So I kind of like these at $449, you know, $449. We got a steep discount on it, right? Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have bought it. As MVPs, we got a really steep discount. But I like it so far. I mean, as a tablet
otherwise,
device,
I wouldn't have bought it.
Yeah, I probably, at $449, John, from a budget standpoint, yeah. I probably wouldn't have bought it, right? At $160, well, how do you turn
that? That's a no-brainer.
Yeah. Yeah, how do you kind of turn down that deal? And if somebody was replacing their tablet or was looking for something like that, I could say, yeah, I think I like it. It falls into serious consideration. I think $399 is a better price, but you know, it worked out well. You get 200 gig of if you buy now, you get 200 gig of free SkyDrive storage space for 2 years, and you get a 1 year Skype premium, and I think they call it Skype World or something like that. You also get Skype free Skype Wi-Fi for a year. So if you're in some place that doesn't have you don't have a Wi-Fi account, Skype's got negotiated these deals with GoGo and some of those other providers, and you can use that without having to pay for it, which is pretty cool. And I'm gonna have to turn the sound down this thing.
You know, Jim, you were saying about the Outlook RT for your email, and you're saying maybe remote some stuff there. But I think you can probably use like Microsoft. A lot of people don't use the what do they call it? The Office web apps. So through your browser, you can use the Office like Outlook and PowerPoint and Calendar.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I think is there a OneNote there? Or what,
there is a OneNote in the web apps. Yep. Yeah. And if you go to Outlook.com, which I, you know, for email, you have access to your calendar and SkyDrive right there, which are dynamite. You know, you have a People app and then a Outlook and calendar, and those work great too. So, you know, all that stuff is available. One of the things we'll talk about maybe here in a little bit is some of the new Xbox stuff that is coming. You know, I have a note. I think Xbox Music is worth looking at again. So it's Andrew, is Xbox Music available to you? They're in the UK. Have they rolled that out? Music.
I don't know about the UK, but
did I say the UK?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, Australia. Being in Australia, I'm not entirely sure.
Australia, UK. It's a stone's throw.
I actually don't know. I haven't gotten into the Microsoft ecosystem at all. I'm totally entrenched in Google. So I know the Xbox One is available here. Because I saw one in a shop just this morning, but I'm not sure about Xbox Music or anything like that.
Yeah, if you go to music.xbox.com, that's the music site. And they launched that back with Windows 8, but with 8.1, they showed us they've made some significant improvements to it, and they quietly kind of improved it under the hood from the way it looks standpoint. And you know, I guess I didn't realize, in all the hubbub, you can stream to your PC if you have a Windows 8.1 or even a Windows 8 PC. You can stream unlimited music to your PC on with Xbox Music. So you get to choose it. You get to pick it. You get to stream it. You can set playlists if you're one of those guys that likes a lot of music and you don't want to pay for it. And then with 8.1, I think they added a new radio feature that's kind of a Pandora replacement. And so you can pick a band, and then it will start feeding you a mix based on that band. And tested that a little bit, and it's a little rough. So they're gonna need to get some data. It's just not quite as good as Pandora, but from the music selection it makes. But just a little bit of testing, not a lot.
Yeah, well, Jim, that makes me think about, the new Surface just came out, right, within the past few weeks or month, whatever, October came out, right? Mm-hmm. And then, next week it's, tomorrow,
yeah.
Xbox mm-hmm. One. So, it's like a lot, and then Microsoft, I think they're trying to shoot or push those Windows 8, not to use it as a media center, because that app is not on there, but to use the video app, like the Metro app or whatever they call those Metro apps are there, mm-hmm. those store apps, but the video and the music. App. So they gotta have that nice and clean, so that when somebody puts it there and turns that thing on, they'll log in with their whatever Microsoft ID and get all their content and stuff, just like from the phone. You want to have a good experience there.
The media guys were very clear with us. They're out. 2014 is the year that Xbox they turn on the music service. Actually, they turn on. They enhance the music service. They're really going to enhance the video service and the gaming experience. And that all kind of blends in through Xbox. And fairly interesting. I don't have an Xbox. The kids do. And I may be looking for an Xbox 360 on Craigslist. They should be pretty cheap here in the U.S.
Yeah, well, the Xbox One is $500.
I know.
And then if you have to buy a Xbox Live account, how much is that? I know they have like now a family account or whatever, but that's probably somewhere in $60 and up,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, no, you're going to invest a little bit to get into that ecosystem. And then if you want a music pass, right, if you want to stream your music anywhere on your phone and those kinds of things, that costs you another $90 a year. Another $100 a year. So they are definitely in for that, but they've got some interesting things coming out. I was pretty impressed, especially along those lines, that their media services and streaming services are getting a little bit better. Are they keeping up with Netflix? I don't know. They're always a couple steps behind everybody else on some of these things. So it's there. It always seems like they're playing a little bit of catch up on it, but interesting nonetheless. And it spending the week there gave me kind of some new insight to when you put names and faces to work, it's a little bit different than when you're just bashing them on the podcast. It's not personal. Yeah, not personal at that point. So one of the other things I did that I got an opportunity to do is right before I left, I actually set up a MSDN, and I think anybody can do this. You can have a free trial to $200 credit on Azure. So if you have ever thought about doing any kind of cloud service, you can go out and set up this MSDN with, I think they call it Visual Studio 2013. And for 30 days, you get a $200 credit, and you can run just about any of the services that are available through the Azure Cloud. And guys, I'll be honest, I didn't realize how fast they've come up to speed with the various images that have available to you. So there's about, 30 or 40 different things you can run on Azure. I mean, all kinds of different Linux versions, all kinds of Ubuntu. You can run a lot of the Windows Server stuff. They don't have a desktop out there. You're not going to run your desktop quite yet. But they have a lot of different stuff out there, and so because I'm a Windows Home Server MVP. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought, I wonder if I could get Windows 2012 Essentials running in the cloud. And let me just show that real quick while we're thinking about it. So let me share my screen with you guys here real quick. And John and I spent some time actually I was in one of the sessions on Monday, and I had John connect to my. I have a box here that I had set up. Let's see. And John, actually, we got John in on a local account, and John helped me set some things up. Let me click the screen so it keeps me in focus. So what's your and so John and I did this locally on the box that's sitting right in front of me here in the studio. Of 2012 Essentials, and so we're going to share this instance, but. Yesterday, someone said, hey, you could set that up on Azure. So what you're seeing here is just a remote desktop connection into a Windows Server 2012 Essentials R2 Essentials set up in Azure. and it looks and acts no different than what if you'd set it up locally. The cost is a little different, right? You don't buy this by CALS or by licensing. You rent the CPU and the storage space, and so the big question is how much would this thing cost to run in the cloud versus if you had an on-prem solution for it. But you can see right here, I mean, this dashboard really looks no different. We'll talk about this more. I'll have more information next week on the home server show. It's probably a little more appropriate over there, but I figured since I had you guys and your home server guys, it's not a different. It sets up 117 gig hard drive. I don't know why the OS is 117.4. That's just whatever they gave me. So one drive, and I imagine, John, I could set up another storage drive and then, and point over to it and make the connection. And the dashboard for Azure, let me bring that up real quick here. Let's see, what am I doing? Okay, I got stuff everywhere. So it's actually a super easy dashboard to use. It'll come up here on the screen in just a second. So there you go, and let me actually blow this out a little bit so you got some better idea how that works. So, you can see I set up a WordPress site. Before I left last week, I just went in. WordPress is one of the things that they have available there, and you can set that up as well. And so I quick set up a WordPress site and signed into it and got that running. So if you go to collisonwp-azurewebsites.net, that will take you to the WordPress. There's nothing out there. I had visions of adding things to it during the conference, and I never did that. And then here's the virtual machine. This is the one that's actually running. This is the Windows Server 2012 instance. And I've got a cloud service account running with it, and it's got storage assigned to it that is there. I had to create a network to make all that stuff come together, and so it's got a virtual network there, and then there's an Active Directory account associated as well. So if you go to all the items, this is kind of your dashboard of everything that's running. And if I click on credit status, hopefully you can see that. Yeah, you can. So you can see right now they gave me a $200 credit, and it's making me so quick. And I think it's been running, that instance has been running a little over 24 hours now, and looks like right now I'm into Microsoft for 78 cents. How's that? 78 cents with Microsoft running a server in the cloud. So not at least at this point, and we haven't done anything, John, one of the things I was thinking about doing was, and I think I can do this, if you look at this screen, if you look at the next screen, what do you see?
Yeah, so that's the download connector.
That's my local screen. So this is the local PC I have here, and I went to collisonserver.cloudapp.net/connect, which is that server running in the cloud, and it presented me with the screen. Now, I haven't gone through with it yet because I'm running another instance. I'm running another connector on this PC, and it's not a good idea to run two connectors at the same time, right? So so I don't have it set up, but that looks like I could just connect to it, and then in theory it would start backing up, right?
Yep.
So kind of interesting.
That'd chew up your 120 gig pretty quickly.
Well, and the question is, I want to mess around with it a little bit more, what's it going to mean from a pricing standpoint? So, if you figure I've been, today was 75 cents, I really haven't done much, so let's just say it's $1 a day. So they get away with $1 a day, $30 a month, $400 a year. Now that's still cheaper than buying a license, right? For a year, maybe the break even is two, but that's really not without doing anything, right? We haven't attached PCs to it. I haven't really uploaded any backups. I haven't done anything with it yet, this part. So
it's the add-on costs as well, because when you're in a bandwidth restricted continent like myself, if you're going to put your music up or your video sources up on it and stream from it, then you're paying for bandwidth in and out of Azure, and then you're paying for your bandwidth into your house as well. So that potentially adds up. Yeah, potentially adds up. Everyone's getting a bite of the pie, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, for sure. The real question is it worth it? And if you could back up, and if I could administrate a Windows Server Essentials that backed up my PCs, and I could do it reasonably, maybe it's not a bad deal. And so,
it's your true offsite backup, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. And you don't have hardware, and Cal
consumption.
And you're not buying cows, and you're not having to deal with the complexity of the licensing. I mean, if a guy like me, I mean, I just read the instructions, and I just set it up. I mean, if a guy like me can do that in 25 minutes in a session, that I set that all up. 25 minutes in a session yesterday. And the session wasn't even talking about that. It was an MSDN and TechNet forums discussion.
I was goofing off. Yeah, I was just goofing off.
Yeah, for sure. You know,
Jim, you make me think about two things there. That screen there that you showed there at the Azure website there, you know, you had a button that said storage, and you created a storage thing,
yeah.
A storage pool or whatever it is, or allocated some kind of memory. It makes me think this week there I was playing around with the CloudBerry Labs backup. You know, they, you know, you have the Keep Vault backup, and you have all those other guys around there. And one of them is CloudBerry. And one of the things, like CloudBerry, gives you about a dozen choices of places you can upload your backups to. And one of them is Windows Azure. There's Glacier and all the other ones there. So one of the things what you have to do is, like, if you, that screen that you're on there, you just go to it, and there's a storage.
Let me bring it back up, John. Hold on, I'll bring it up so folks know. If you're listening to the audio, you probably want to head over to our YouTube page. Just go to theaverageguy.tv/YouTube, and that will take you there. Let me bring that up. Okay, it's up.
Yeah, you see where it's written storage, right?
Yep.
Click on that one, yep. Storage. And basically, okay. Now you see you've created a storage, like a pool there, and then you click on the bottom there where you had that, there was an icon there. It said that in that gray area. What's it called?
Manage access keys?
Yeah, the first one, manage. Yeah. Click on that, and let's see what pops up. Okay, you see you have some keys that change, that you generate these keys. So what happens is you have the name of your pool there, and then you have this key. Mm-hmm. Now what happens is what you'll do is, in the CloudBerry backup add-in, when you said, you know, you select Windows Azure, and then it's going to say, okay, you know, give us your details, and that's what the information you put there. You'll just cut and paste. You'll say, it's Windows Azure. You just give it a name, like a default name. It doesn't really mean anything. Just call it Windows Azure or Azure or whatever. But then when it asks you for the key, you put this key here. And this is how now it'll sync. And then it'll connect to the server, and then it'll pull in some information, and it'll generate a name called backup, and then a bunch of letters. And then from then on, anytime, then what happens is now in the CloudBerry backup, you'll pick your shares. You'll start to see all your shares. It'll ask you, what do you want to back up? And you'll see, pick your shares and all that stuff. So what's important here is that's the two pieces of information you need is to be able to have this, well, Azure account, go to storage, create a storage, either that storage you have there or you create another one.
Yeah, here, I'll walk through that. Yeah, here you just hit add, and then data services and storage, and then I can do quick create, and it's going to ask me for some information, right? And then I can pick the URL of that storage name and assign it to a particular group, and when I click create storage account, it just does it. Bam, it just spits it out.
So then if you're using CloudBerry because there's a CloudBerry add-in for Windows Home Server version 1 even. I mean, old school. There's a CloudBerry backup for that one, and then the Windows Home Server and Small Business Server 2011. And while with the Storage Server 2012 Essentials, the Azure one is like built in. You download the Microsoft one, and you use only, you know, basically you can, I guess you can go and purchase the, because I think it's $30 for the CloudBerry Labs added. Mm-hmm. So for Server 2012, you might as well just use the free one that comes from Microsoft, you know. But if you have the Windows Home Server 2011 or Small Business Server 2011 or Windows Home Server version 1, CloudBerry Labs have that connection to these guys.
Yeah. Well, you can see how easy it is to figure. I mean, this is definitely, I wouldn't quite say it's an average guy solution, and maybe it's a little bit beyond the average tech guy for the most part, but not much. Not much. I mean, again, I set this up just following instructions, and you know, it all came together. I set up the WordPress site without any instructions. I just kind of went through it, and, you know, here's the site, you know, so I'm just going to click on it, and it's going to go ahead and head over to the site, and you can see here, this is just a regular WordPress site, you know. And after I set it up for the first time, there's these cool things inside here where if you go new and compute, and you go to these from the gallery, so compute website from a gallery, and there are all these apps, and there are tons. I mean, look at this. You've got apps, frameworks, blogs, CMSs, e-commerce, forums, galleries, templates, tools, and wikis. And so these are all. And look at, I mean, there are a bunch in here. In fact, I even found ThinkUp, which is a Gina Trapani app from, I listen to her on This Week in Google all the time. And you can get an instance of ThinkUp from here, which I thought, wow, that's kind of interesting. I mean, some really interesting. And in this case, I just came over to blogs, and I chose WordPress. And I said, and you know, and you can set up with an account. You get 10 free of these sites. They never charge for the websites, right, that have minimal storage behind them. And so, yeah, it's just, you know, click through. And
yeah, it's a good solution, because I remember when the version 1, Windows Home Server version 1, you could add, you know, since you have the server set up at home, you can, you know, do a WordPress site. Like, there was an add-in, you could download and install, and now you're hosting it from home. But every week or so, there's always patches and updates for WordPress. Yeah. So at least over here, it's like they're taking care of all that.
Not on the WordPress side. The back-end side, yes. Not the WordPress. No, you still have to go in and update. It's still an instance of WordPress. So in this case, it's 3.7, and I immediately had to upgrade it to 3.7.1. So,
but if there's a virus, they get it and not you, no?
Exactly. It's just like hosting, right? They provide the platform, but they help you set up the host providing stuff.
Cool.
So pretty cool. I think, like I said, if you go out to, I think if you just go out to Windows Azure, AZURE.com, and you can set up a 30-day trial, and they give you this $200 credit. Again, it's you know, in this case, here's the dashboard that I used to get to and I get 24 days left and $199 in credit because I've only used $1 so far. I think. Hopefully this weekend, and there's a little pricing calculator here. So if you do want to see, you know, there's some free stuff here, the SQL database and such. And they have what's called free, shared, and standard. And, you know, to set up, let's just say it, to set up a shared database or a shared site. In other words, the free site, you can set up these sites, these websites like WordPress for free. You can run up to 10 of those in a subregion. It's like shared hosting you get on a, like GoDaddy, right? A really cheap provider. Now, I don't think as many people are using Azure as are using GoDaddy at this point, so you might get really good service, right? You might not. It just kind of depends. But if you wanted to add some additional things to this, say you wanted to go over to shared and you wanted a site, that's going to run you, in this case, about $9 a year to run that shared website here. I think these are annual. $9 a month to run that one site on a shared server. That's a step above the free stuff.
And so, even that's pretty respectable when you extrapolate it out. You know, $100 a year. But I guess that's taking into account the trending that they've got so far about your bandwidth and storage and whatnot, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I still think it's pricey, Andrew. I'll be honest with you. I don't.
Yeah.
This is not your budget, you know. This isn't your budget option at this point if you're going to go with Microsoft on this.
Yeah, but at least what's neat is that the server, if your site keeps getting hit, I mean, they have the throughput for that. You know, if you have it set up at your homes at your home and you have your upload download bandwidth, everybody's, you know, knocking on your pfSense router, you know? It's like here at least they're going through Microsoft's pipe, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about all of a sudden, I don't know, you make, you know, you sell something or whatever, and then next thing you know, you got 50,000 people that are trying to buy your Windows 8 app or something. At least they can, you know,
right
through their site, they take care of it.
Yeah, and that is
assuming that.
Go ahead.
Sorry,
no, go ahead.
No, you go. I was going to say you'd be assuming with this also that they're offering IDS, IPS, you know, some form of antivirus protection and whatnot as part of it by default as well. So as opposed to doing it yourself where you can be compromised and not know about it, you know, on something like this, you're going to you'd hope that they're running a, you know, a trend deep security or sort of transparent AV, and they'll tell you if you're being penetrated or exploited or whatnot.
I haven't dug into it. It's just one of those, it was an interesting thing that I thought, oh hey, this, I've always kind of ignored it because I thought it was too difficult. And then I was like, oh, this isn't that hard. I mean, if you can set up a Windows Server 2012 Essentials box locally, and in the last week I've done both. I set one up locally and I've set one up in the cloud. If you can do one, you can do the other. And in fact, the setup in Azure is even easier, and I think it's better documented than it is to do it on-prem, so to speak.
Jim, you make me think about another thing about the Azure is the, you know, like Okay, last year when Windows came out, Microsoft came out Windows Server 2012 Essentials, and then now they came out with the R2, and they're like, some of the guys are saying, hey, Essentials, we'd like to run that, you know, whatever. So so what they did is the people that have the full version, Windows Server 2012, they're able to add it. It becomes now as a role, right? So you can buy the package separate, $500, or you can now, if you bought R2012 R2, you can add it as a role. So now what happens is you add that role, and then basically it creates Windows 2012 Essentials on a VM. So it's running on the VM in your server, and now and that's where Microsoft wants to try and get you, because then it's like, okay, you kind of like, now you're running that server and you say, hey, you know, I like it, this and that, and then Microsoft says, hey, you know what, that VM that you're running and that bandwidth and you're paying for power and your server and this and that, you know what, that you can send that up to the cloud, to the Azure cloud, and just have it sitting there. And now just like sit back and we're going to take it. So they're kind of like putting in those hooks so that once you have that Server Essentials running on your 2012 box, then eventually you can just like, oh, you know, you hit a button and it's like, let's say your server goes down, your internet service provider gives you some whatever, you lose your connection or something. You can just go online and you say, hey, take over online and do your thing there. And then people would just back up however it is they do. But basically that's the goal, is Microsoft is wants to try to get you to have your server online.
Yeah. Well, just to kind of recap it, I don't think this is the cheapest solution on the planet. So if you're budget conscious, you're probably not, you know, you're not going with this. But it's worth a try. It's free right now. You can do a 30-day trial, $200 of credit, and you can give it a shot. So if you're an IT pro and you want to mess with it, if you want to mess with Azure and get that, you know, get that, give it a try. I think you can give it a spin. I've done it, and it wasn't particularly that hard, and so it'd be good to give it a spin. So give that a try. Just go out to, I think it's WindowsAzure.com. And you can get all that stuff that's out there.
Yeah, you can also get you can also spin up a Linux VM, so you're not just restricted to Windows. You can do Windows, Linux. You can get SQL, SharePoint, a bunch of other stuff on top of it.
Data center. You can spin up a Windows Server 2012 R2 data center if you want to. I mean, a lot of those instances. And the nice thing about that is the complexity of the licensing is gone, right? They sell it to you on a use per use basis, and so you get access to, you don't have to do CALs and worry about all that stuff if you're a pro. Maybe not a bad way. Again, I'd love to see some of the pricing come down, but maybe in the small business realm, not a bad way to sell Essentials to a small business and have them pay month by month and what they use, as opposed to buying a server. You know, if you're going to get a really good server, you know, you're going to spend maybe $1,000 on that and throw some drives in it.
Well, these two servers I have in the show notes there, they're $4,000 each.
Yeah.
It's not cheap.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, maybe if you're doing that, maybe this is cheaper than doing all that stuff on-prem. So, all right, John, let's talk a little bit about Microsoft releases a fix for remote web access on 2011.
Yeah. Well, that's it. As you said, Microsoft released a fix because some of the people were noticing when they were trying to connect to their servers, they were getting a 404 error. Let me just click on this link. So actually, the fix was to go into it because it happens when you're using Windows, when you're using Internet Explorer 11, version 11, and then Windows Home Server 2011. There's a patch for Small Business Server 20. It's like the whole Colorado product class there. It's Small Business Server 2011 Essentials and Windows Storage Server 2008 R2 Essentials. And the fix was actually, if you knew it, you know, you have to be a bit of an IT guy. The fix was to go in and, you know, you set your website for a compatibility view. You know how sometimes you go to some websites and you try to, you know, pull some stuff in, it doesn't come in, you have to press compatibility, and then the stuff starts to work. So here it's a bit, basically that's what they're kind of doing, is they're patching that so that, you know, it's on the server side, so now if you know, you don't have to modify that on your end, on the PC end. So that was a nice little fix.
Yeah, let me say, just as we're talking about this, so maybe you've joined us for the first time tonight and you're thinking home tech and these guys are talking servers. Well, let me just say, anytime we have John Zadler on, we always talk servers. So in the future, if you come back, you know, that's kind of why I bring John on. We're all home server guys, and you know, from homeservershow.com. And so anytime I get him on here, we do talk a little bit of home server. And I can talk about anything that I want. I'll just be honest. I can do it if I want to. Good stuff. What else you got, John?
The other thing was, let me see, Windows Server Essentials and Small Business Server blog have a nice write-up on the My Server 2012 R2 Windows 8 and Windows Phone apps. So that's like the Metro apps for the new Windows 8.8 and 8.1, and then the phone, they use their sort of Metro app. Because last year, we had the Windows Server 2012 Essentials, the non-R2 version. Right. So there was an app for this app that you can go to your tablet or your phone and you can go on your server and see how many users you have. A little bit of administration. See how many shares are there. See if you have any warnings or error messages. So it's just like a little checklist and stuff. So that was for that app. But then the people who tried to use that app with the new, since last year they started with the 2012 R2 Essentials, that original app didn't work. So it's like, okay, well, when is this app going to be updated for this new machine? And here we go. That's what that app is.
Yeah, I need to download it. I didn't. I was going to do that this week, and I ran out of time. But download that app, and it gives you some. Although, you know, remote management has just gotten slick. You know, you and I were doing that on Monday, and some of those tools, when you go into remote management, are pretty nice. I mean, if you can get to the box and you can remote in, you've got a lot of. You got a lot of access from that thing.
Yeah, you're sitting there, and let's say you got access to all the options, you know. So what's nice is this is a little bit of a graphical interface. It's got a little bit of some, if you like, a little bit of eye candy, and yep. You know, sort of like the big buttons on your tablet or whatever, as opposed to remote desktop connection. Yeah, you get the more functionality, but you know, everything is like this print is small unless you like click to zoom or whatever it is and try to expand it. So it's a nice little app. Makes me think of, I actually, you know me, I keep going back old school there, but there's actually the version of those apps for Windows Home Server 2011 and Small Business Server Essentials 2011, so even that generation before, there's some apps there you can find them at the Apple, for the Apples. I'm not sure if they have, excuse me, if they had them for the Android, but they have them for
iOS.
iPhone, iOS. Yeah. Yeah. But this one, you need the latest iOS, I think. That's the case. What is it, 6.0 or higher? 7. Yeah, well, 7, yeah, but 6. Because some devices, you can only, if you have like an iPod Touch there, you can only, depending what generation, I think I have the third gen here, I can't put iOS 6 on this. So you need 6 or higher. Yeah, that's the other thing. That's the
thing. Right. Let's talk a little bit about this new Seagate offering, because we saw this on. I think I saw this on Sunday when I was headed out to Seattle. I saw this email come through, and Seagate has decided to kind of jump in the business storage NAS business a little bit. No, I shouldn't say jump in. They've been there, but they kind of have a new offering. Talk a little bit about that, John.
Yeah, they're calling it the Business Storage Windows Server 4-Bay NAS. So, you know, they're using the word storage. Oh, okay, at least they use the word server in there, too. So they're using storage, server, and NAS. So in case you don't, you know, you're a little bit, do I need a server? Do I need a NAS? Do I need some storage? What do I need? So they got it all covered. But this one is running a dual-core 2.13 gigahertz Intel Atom CPU. I don't know if it's like the latest gen, because remember we had old gen Atoms and some of the, you know, if you have in your head, Atoms, they're really slow and stuff like that. Again, you know, you're using this as a file server, so it doesn't have to be like a rocket. But then again, you know, some of the more current CPUs are like 2.13 gigahertz. Usually the older ones were 1.6 or 1.3, 1.6, 1.8. This is all the way up to 2.3. That one comes with 512 megabytes of DRAM, 4 SATA 2 channels with hot swappable locking trays. And the business storage 4-bay NAS is available in 4, 8, 12, and 16 terabytes. And you can set it up as in a RAID 0, 1, 5, and 10. So it does a lot of options.
So yeah,
when you're 16 terabytes, that means that you're putting 4 terabyte drives.
Yeah, and it looks like it comes no drives loaded. $349, so $350 for which is a little bit cheaper than a Synology box, I think, or Drobo for sure. Right? Am I looking at the right thing here? Yeah, Business Storage 4-Bay NAS, right? Yep, $349 at Best Buy. Do you see that?
Let me click.
See that on my screen there?
Yeah, I see it. There's a nice little video there, and I think there's a slot there above the LCD screen. I think they have some kind of, remember like HP used to have their cartridges, they're sort of like hard drives that they put in sort of like a little caddy and then they put it into some of their devices. I think this is the one that, There's two of them. I'm not confused between
the pocket, the old, what's they call it, pocket drive.
HP had that, yeah, up here.
Yeah, I think on one of their pictures that they had, I don't know if you scroll down, if it's on that page, but I think I was flying around and on some of the, maybe on their...
there you go.
Promo? There you go. Okay. So, yeah, there you go. I'm not crazy. So, yeah, there is a drive there.
Universal storage module, which universal means no one else uses it. Slot that lets you transfer files to and from USM-compatible portable drives at speeds of up to 3 times faster than USB 3.0, all at the touch of a button. So it's probably proprietary to them, but they call it universal, right, you know, allegedly.
Yeah.
And so that's what you get to... Yeah, that's what you get. So not pricing wise, if you're a big Seagate fan, this might be one of those things. Like I said, $349. Here they don't sell it with four terabytes. It starts at eight. So $699 for eight, $949 for 12, and 16 will cost you $1,200. Still not terrible.
It's not bad.
No, it's all right. And a lot of people like the idea of having, backing up their stuff to the drive and then, taking the drive out and, swapping out drives. So hopefully that'll be an easy interface to be able to do that. And with the display, it'll tell you when you can, pull out the drive and all of that stuff.
Yeah, they've got software that automatically makes incremental backups from PCs on the network to it, right? So it works just like a home server in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I think the OS, that's the... Is that one? That's not the ReadyNAS. Okay, no, the ReadyNAS is the next one. Okay.
Yeah, let me kick over. They've got this is the business storage 4-bay. They also have these are the with the drives added, so you get some kind of indication here. Dual core, 700 megahertz. They come with 512 RAM. You said all that for already.
So. Do they say what the OS is?
Let's pop open the data sheet and take a peek here. Let's see what it says. I would have to read through it, John, to be honest with you.
Because there's one there. I'm not sure. That's the
Here's bonus. A data sheet. I'll throw that in the notes. Lopta says he'd rather have an N54L made by our friends at HP.
Yeah, or N54L or the...
support my retirement plan.
That's right. We got to keep Andrew. Or the Gen 8, right, John?
Yeah, Gen 8, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Now, we saw that come out. Like I said, they just made that announcement, so... I keep clicking the wrong buttons. We saw that come out this weekend, and fairly interesting. Everybody's kind of, now that Windows Home Server has dropped out, we're seeing a few more NAS-like boxes come out. I know certainly Synology is going after that group. I think Drobo is going to make a serious run at it. They're kind of retooling and are going to do some things different here pretty quick. And here's Seagate. I know Western Digital, John, don't you have a new box coming?
Yeah. I have a tweet here. I said the Seagate Business Storage. I think it's running Windows Storage Server 2012 Work Group. I don't know if that's the higher end one because maybe they have a different the 4, the 8, the 12, and the 16. So I'm not sure if you buy the higher end one if you're gonna get it. But it's Windows because I think there was I tweeted a link out there where they had some kind of videos on their site. Let me see if I can just click that. That's going to pull something up. Now I'll put that in copy. I'll put it in our chat. Yeah, I'm expecting from Western Digital they're going to be sending me a... again, like you said, a few of these guys are coming out with different hardware, and Western Digital has a box that I've never seen before. It's called the Archaea, and that's a Linux-based... server, so that's going to be it's the same form factor like the Western Digital boxes, and but it's running a Linux OS, and I guess you can probably again the same thing where you can put 2 terabytes, 3 terabytes, or 4 terabyte drives in that one.
Yep. Maybe home server was just a couple decades too early. Now with these NAS, it really is an interesting place to be because these a lot of these NAS devices like Synology, like Western Digital, like Seagate, that are coming out now, are really trying to do the exact same thing, right? They're using some kind of backup software, and they're just trying to back everything up, and then they're advertising. It's interesting because Microsoft never said this, but your own private cloud, right? That's become the kind of the speak on these companies is have your own private cloud. Don't let the NSA in on your data.
True. So that link I have there, Jim, after maybe you could just put it in the show notes, and it's also pointing to a couple of YouTube videos. Seagate has some YouTube videos, and when you look at it, you see that it has Active Directory support and how to create users and stuff. But it's really when you dig into this, it's not like a Windows Home Server or even 2012 Essentials where you have the dashboard, you click on users and you add them, or you click on shares. Yeah, you got to get into the, it's the nitty gritty. You know, you're like right click on computer properties, add drive, this and that. It's like down. You know, it's really granular, and you can really kind of mess things up. So I think this is for an IT kind of guy.
An IT guy who knows Windows, right?
Yeah.
It's based on that.
That's it. And then moving on, the other thing is, Western Digital is, like I said, they should be sending me out this Linux box, is Archaea. And then they have another box that I just saw pop up last week called a MyCloud. And that one is supposed to be, I don't know again what OS, it's. I didn't read it too much, but I think that one carries, they put Western Digital Red drives in there. So that's a nice, that's going to be a nice option. Because... the other box that I'm trying to get my hands on is the Western Digital DX6100, and that's a $4,000 plus box. I think you guys talked about it a little bit on the Home Server show, and that one has like four terabyte drives, has two SSD drives in a RAID 0. It's got a Xeon, you know, like it's got, even though that box is a small little footprint, you know, the size of whatever, I don't know, large book or, you know, like whatever, pretty big, yeah. 10 by 10 by 10, let's say, you know. Right. It's a nice small box. It's like they put, you know, an industry standard Xeon CPU on there. Andrew, Xeon, right? That's business class CPU now for servers?
Damn straight.
Yep. There you go. Right. So hopefully, but that's, you know, $4,000 and up, which is also, and I guess now Net in their show notes,
I have one. That's a fair chunk of change when you consider you can buy an N54L microserver for under $250 at the moment.
Yeah, and then the 54, you can't change out the CPU. You're kind of stuck with that CPU, but it's a 2.1 gigahertz. It's good for like a small business. It's good for the home. The Gen 8, at least that one, you can swap out the CPU, put something, you know, buy the cheap model, and then, you know, somehow if you come across the CPU or you figure it's a little slow, then you say, hey, you know what, I'll upgrade the RAM, and because I think that Gen 8, you can put 16 gigs of RAM, and then you could get... you know, upgrade the CPU, but those are bare bone boxes. Whereas the Western Digital, the DS60, the 5100 is the cheaper one, and then you have the 6100. That one is like, you know, the turnkey solution. That one has the software, everything on it. That's like, you know, you buy it at wherever it is, Western Digital. They ship it to you. You plug in the cables. You turn it on. You add a couple of users, like, you know, in an hour or two, like a regular person. You know, if you're a bit of a guy that's an analytical mind, you can walk through it and get it going. And then Western Digital gives you your the Guardian support. So they got somebody like on the phone that you can call 24/7 and say, you know, where do I click? So, $4,000 is pricey.
Well, and so, John, you also put in the show notes a new one from Netgear as well that's not terribly cheap.
That's right. So that Netgear one is a manufacturer's suggested retail price in the U.S. is $4,500, and that's a quad-core Xeon-equipped NAS that they claim is the fastest in the world. So there you go. So there's some competition for Western Digital. And what's that?
I'd want to polish your shoes for that much money.
Yeah. And a few other things.
I'm going to read up a little bit about this one, but what I did find interesting is that it's running their ReadyNAS software. So it's not like the Windows OS. Like the Western Digital, again, that one is running Windows Server 2012 R2 Essentials, like the latest and greatest Essentials software from Microsoft. Whereas this one, it seems to be a couple hundred dollars more expensive, and it's their ReadyNAS, and it's their OS system. So I don't know how robust and, you know, it is compared to Microsoft.
I think ReadyNAS's OS is pretty. I think it's pretty resilient. For memory, I think it's built on QNX.
Okay.
It's a Unix variant of sorts. But yeah, I don't know. My reservation with anything that's not Windows Home Server or, you know, Windows Essentials, or, you know, pick your variant, is the client backup and restore. I mean, I still don't see any of these as providing the same turnkey solution that we've had out of the Windows Home Server and then the Essentials line of products.
Right.
That's where they fail for me. I mean, you know, as a branch office drop-in file server, you know, if you want to throw you know, 30, 40 users on it, something like this is probably great. You know, assuming it integrates with your Active Directory and all the other. But, depends on the market, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of options out there. I mean, I'm scrolling through here, if you're watching the live video, I'm scrolling through all the different options, and it's like, holy crap. I mean, they've got some different options out there as far as what you can buy.
Seems like Microsoft took the wrong time to jump out of Windows Home Server.
Go figure, eh? Right? Like, yeah, everybody's like, it was almost like, nobody wants storage. And then Microsoft's like, okay, we'll stop doing storage. And then everybody's like, hey, look at our storage. This is great.
Yeah, and you know, like you say, on one hand, they're trying to say, you know, go to the cloud, and people have that buzzword in their head, and now it's all, now they're kind of like wording it, well, you know, have your own personal cloud,
right,
you know, at home, which is, again, back to being, it's actually your server, you know, it's like, who are you trying to fool, you know? So it's like, but, you know, use those words, your personal cloud, and use NAS, so that people who are afraid of the word server or whatever, you know, like I said, the other box there, the earlier one there, it's you know, it's running the storage server 2012 workgroup, which is really tough, you know, to get into. Whereas, you know, some of these other guys, it's just, you know, click and point, like Synology. That's, you know, that's very easy. You know, you click on the stuff. If you need an app for an iTunes server or what, or even a WordPress or whatever, you can just download that app, add it to the box, and away you go.
Yeah, it, Rennie said, very crowded market right now, and I have to agree. It's weird that all of a sudden these things have picked up. You know, you might want to, if you're listening to my show and you haven't listened to homeservershow.com, Dave and I, we're actually getting ready to turn that into Storage Geeks, just because there's so much, the field has gotten really wide in that. But John, we're going to try and get John back on there to talk about that Western Digital box after he's had it for a while and kind of messed around with it and some other things all around storage. But yeah, it's gotten busy again. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's still, for us home server guys, there is still a place out there for us to find some things, either your own turnkey solutions like this. Hey, guys, this Seagate solution is fairly inexpensive. I mean, you could get in it and do some things with it. It's like a Synology in some ways, although I think Synology is leading the way, right? They're doing a really nice job with their boxes. So, interesting.
Yeah, they got to integrate well with the Windows, with the new Windows 8, with the phone, with the tablets and stuff, because a lot of these devices, they don't have, or, you know, let's say you're not carrying all your content, or one day you'll be, you know, you're mobile, everybody's going mobile, right? So it's like, well, do I get, you know, which tablet do I get? Do I get the 32 gig, the 64, the 128, the 256? It's costing you hundreds of dollars every time you upgrade. So if you say, you know what, all I need is a good Wi-Fi connection, like your you said there before, the Nokia tablet, the 2520 or whatever, that one has a LTE, right? Wireless connection. So, you know, if you don't have all your content on your, you know, movies or pictures or whatever files on your device, you know, you can connect back to your server, which is, you know, you can have one of these small little boxes, and as long as there's good integration, like I said, between, you know, Android and iOS and the Microsoft stuff, that might be a good way to go.
Yeah. Good stuff. Very cool. John, anything else for you along those lines? We're out of show notes stuff, but anything else?
Maybe next time I'll talk about, I got a little tidbit. What is it there? Like a little carrot there. The Office Maven. Remember his add-ins? He's got some Windows, he's got the Office add-in, which is you install it on the server, and then you, on your PC, you access your Outlook, your Word, basically your Office apps that are on the server. He's got that app, and then he's got a Quicken app, and he also has one they call the remote app. And basically, with the remote app, is like you could pick any software that's on your server, and you say, like, let's say you're running, I don't know, Photoshop or some media program or whatever, and you say, look, I want to be able to, I have it installed on the server, but I want to be able to run it on my PC. Well, what's, you know, that's what that program is used for. So that's one thing. The candy here, or the carrot here, is that now he's added an integration there with iOS devices and Android devices. Coming back to what we were saying before with the Windows updated, Microsoft updated that remote web access app. So using that app, you'll type in your credentials for your server, and now what happens is you'll be able to log into Mike Craven's remote web app, and then now run those applications that you've assigned to it. So either you can run, like I said, the remote web app, or you can run the Windows Home Server Office apps. So now you're on your Android tablet, and you'll go, and then you'll have your Outlook and Word and all your apps and Project. I've downloaded, it supports Project and Visio and Publisher and like Word and Excel and all that stuff. So you'll basically now from your mobile device, you're accessing. Getting back to like what I said before, is like you have your little box at home, you have your tablet, maybe you're missing something, but you connect to it, and boom, you get all your content there. So I've been testing, I'm one of the first guys to beta test his stuff there, so it's running well.
Very cool.
Very good. I'll talk about that next time.
Okay, we'll bring you back for that. Andrew, you crashed your car, and you got a new one.
Yeah.
Any new tech in the car that's worthy of talking about, or is it just a family? Is it a family van?
Look, you guys are going to look at it, and it's pretty much a dual cab pickup. So, it's going to be the family weekend getaway truck. You guys would say that it's old school tech. I mean, it's got a Bluetooth enabled radio in it, and I can stream from my phone
good
to
enough.
It. And
good enough.
I can plug in my 30-pin iPod Classic and. You know, play direct from that, which is a bonus without having to, you know, spend
nice.
A couple hundred bucks on interface gear. But 2-liter diesel, 6-speed manual gearbox, gets about, you know, 7.2, 7.3 liters per 100 kilometers. So pretty happy with that.
I don't know what that means.
600 miles out of a tank.
Oh, basically. That's not bad. That's not bad.
Yeah. Out of an 80-liter tank.
You,
so.
Come on, you got to talk Imperial if you're going to talk on this show, man. You can't. Oh. Don't use that metric system crap.
I'm just talking the way the rest of the world do.
I know, but I'm not in the rest of the world.
Okay, U.S. miles per gallon about 24.
I know. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Hey, you know, speaking of international,
Us Canadians know what you're talking about there. That's okay.
Yeah.
It was this conference, the MVP conference, very international, which was surprising. We had, you couldn't, every language was spoken. It was very cool. So that was kind of fun. We had a good time with that. So you enjoying it so far? Working out well for you?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I had a couple of teething problems. You know, that was the build of it's out of South America. So, you know,
really?
Argentinian paint shops aren't quite as good as German ones. But yeah, look, it's got a Volkswagen badge on it, and, you know, we're pretty happy with it.
Cool.
Yeah, you know, the dealerships looked after all the niggles we had, so yeah, it's all good.
Nice. And was it brand new?
Yeah, brand new.
Okay, very nice.
Yeah, we hadn't wanted to spend that sort of money in a year because we've just bought two new cars, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, and we're just glad you weren't hurt. That was
That's the thing. You can replace a car, you can't replace a person.
No. Yeah, it's significant. I mean, you were safe, but it did quite a bit of damage to the car. You showed me those pictures, and the car was pretty well hit.
Yeah.
Speaking of accidents, just as we kind of come in for a landing here, our good friend Seth White, who is a host on the show early or late last year, he hasn't been on in a while. He's been busy. Photographer guy, works with Mike Howard over at JPEG to RAW. At jpegraw.com. Yeah, Seth had a seizure the other day and went in. They took him in and they found he had a brain tumor. And so he just had surgery this morning. Mike Howard and I have been talking back and forth throughout the day. Surgery seemed to have gone well. You know what those things. You know, it's going to take a couple weeks to a couple months for everything to be worked out. But Seth is a good guy and a good friend of the show and hangs out in our Facebook group as well. And so we wish Seth the best of healing and hope that he gets hopefully they got it all. You know, it was a tumor that had gone in the wrong spot and caused a seizure, and so they went in and pulled that tumor out today, and hopefully they got it all. You know, we had great results with Mike Howard and his cancer, and so we'll wish Seth the very best. He probably won't get a chance to listen to this, but if you follow on Facebook at all or you see him out there, wish him well and in a speedy recovery. And we hope he recovers from that well. We are off here in the United States next week. It's Thanksgiving week, and so we will not be podcasting next Thursday, and then I have a full slate of podcasts for you in December as well. I'm bringing some of the old guys back, and we'll have a full, and Andrew, we got to try and get you more every week. Maybe December we can do that. It'll be summer, so it'll be easy for you, hopefully, to get on.
Yeah.
Is it warming up for you?
Yeah, I've had a couple of days of 30 degrees somewhere in the 80s.
Nice. Got to find a way to get there. We are I'm doing some more podcasting with Gallup, and you know, our shows are getting a couple hundred live, which is kind of cool. And we've done a couple in Singapore, and I'm trying to weasel my way at least to Sydney somehow, and so it'd be good to come out and see you. That'd be awesome to make the way over. I say that all the time, but they'll never say.
If you get to Sydney, I'll come to Sydney as much as I don't like the place.
They're all right there in Sydney. Our staff is good in Sydney, but we'll make, if I'm going all the way to Sydney.
Just the city, it's just the city itself. Melbourne-Sydney rivalry. Yeah.
If I make it to Sydney, I'm going to make it all the way to Melbourne. So we'll get there for sure. But all good from that. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. We have all the links that you'd ever need to do that, like iTunes or Xbox Marketplace. And actually, I found out they're removing podcasts from the Xbox Marketplace. And they would not tell me what they're doing next, but podcasts are going somewhere different now. So Rob Greenlee probably has the best information on that, if you can follow him on Twitter as well. He's kind of our Microsoft rep. Whenever I have a problem with the feed over there, the old Zoom feed, Rob Greenlee's the one guy to get it done. But it sounds like Microsoft's going to do something different with podcasts coming up. So we'll have to stay tuned and see what. And I don't know. They didn't, even though we're NDA, they didn't tell us. We'll see what's coming up. But all the links that you ever need, including like Stitcher and some of the other places we are at, they're all over at theaverageguy.tv. You can catch the show live each Thursday night, except on Thanksgiving, because that's on a Thursday every single year here in the United States. But you can catch it Thursday nights live, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern at theaverageguy.tv/live. Jump into the Facebook. Lots of good conversation going on over there in the Facebook group. That's just theaverageguy.tv/Facebook. So we appreciate you guys coming out tonight. We'll stay around for a little bit of post-show, although I made a resolution before New Year's. I'm going to work hard getting sleep. This 2014 is going to be the year of sleep for me. I'm actually going to try and get more sleep in 2013. That are 2014 than I did in 2013. So I'm reading a book called Eat, Move, Sleep by Tom Rath. He was a guy that actually worked for Gallup for a time. He's on sabbatical now and wrote this book. And he's kind of convinced me that I need to get a little more sleep each night. And Andrew, I know that's kind of impossible for you.
Sleeps or anything.
I just don't get enough sleep these days, so I'm going to try. No longer am I going to stay super long on the podcasts and stay up really late messing around on the computer. I'm actually going to try and go to bed and get some actual sleep. So that will be good. But stay around for the post show. We'll stay around for a little bit. And we'd like to thank you for coming out and listening tonight. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.